Hi, this is Mark Edward Davis with EuropeanDreamConnections.com, or EDC. I'm a published author of Mastering the Adventure of International Dating and a media spokesperson in behalf of international relationships. Oh, and a personal success story, a guy who's happily married to an amazing Ukrainian woman named Anna for the last 5 years now. Look, I want to tell you, tonight is special. This is what we do every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. We have these webinars to accomplish three things. We want to educate, develop, and celebrate. We educate new guys who are just discovering this and help them understand that foreign relationships are viable and how to practically make it happen. We do personal development for guys and coaching, so if they're in action and they're looking on their quest to find their queen, we want to help them. And third, we celebrate. We celebrate guys who've made it happen, and we have a community here we're developing of happily married couples and all the guys who'd like to be in that group someday. So to that end, welcome to EuropeanDreamConnections.com and our weekly Thursday night webinar.
Now I'm going to jump in real quick here from the studio. We had a little glitch in the introduction here, but I'll do it now. Steve Neese is a guy we affectionately refer to as the professor. He has, after traveling extensively into numerous countries and done a real study on the difference between the dating scene in the West and overseas, and the amount of volume of research he's done, I've never seen anything like it. But I opened the interview talking about one of his other things he does, and that's aviation, and he's even taught flying to others. So I asked him if he had any crazy stories to share. So here we go.
Nothing too exciting. I've had some close calls. If anybody's ever flown before, it's not a good idea to do intersection takeoffs when you're fully loaded with cargo. Had a little scare there,
wow.
I'll tell you, that's really when you're coming in, end of the runway's coming up, and you're not floating off the ground yet, and you're thinking you're going to roll off the edge. Well, my heart was beating, and boy, I just barely made it. But that's the most exciting. No gear up landings or any other crazy stories. But besides that, being in thunderstorms where if your seatbelt's not on fully, your head will hit the top of the airplane ceiling. So,
as bad as
it gets.
That's okay. You know what? If a guy involved in aviation could say he made it through a lifetime without an exciting story, that would probably be a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, hey, obviously the reason we're here tonight is because we got a bunch of guys here who, and this obviously, Steve, I just say to you, there's 44 million single guys in just the United States of America alone, and most of them are going to find somebody locally. But what we're really doing is we've got a tribe of guys who are just their hearts yearning, they're curious, they're trying to, it's like that whisper of a hope, and they kind of want, is it real? Could it really be that there's something different out on the other side? And so to that end, I just want to start off by, if you could just share your story, where you came from, how you first got overseas, and just kind of what that was like for you, I'd be grateful, man. Go for it.
Yeah, well, I would say in the U.S., most of my life I've had an attraction to Asian ladies. I like their look, and they're petite, and I find that cute, and also they're very conservative. You know, I noticed when I went out here in Dallas to the singles places, bars or clubs, that they're very well behaved. They kind of behave respectfully, just more so than the average woman. And they didn't have their tongues down guys' throat getting crazy drunk. It just is some, just noticed a difference of class and more conservative ways of, of being. And I kind of always disliked that impression I saw of the culture. And so anyways, that eventually led to me to decide to want to try something different. I think it was about 34. By the time I started to think of maybe I'll try going out of the country. And, of course, mm-hmm. Philippines came up to my mind because, I've always loved the looks of the Filipinas. And they speak English down there. I thought that's pretty cool. You get to travel to another country where, everybody pretty much speaks English. And so that's where I jetted off to. I took a buddy of mine. We ended up going twice together. My first I've been total seven times to the Philippines. That gives you an idea how much I love the culture. It's very unique qualities to it. Winston, your next interview can help you expand on that more because he actually lives over there most of the year. So, but anyways, my first experience with this was mind blowing. I never imagined women like that existed anywhere. I thought, wow. The first thing I thought was, this is exactly the type of women I've been looking for whole life. I mean, you can, I mean, you know, you could fall in love with anybody, and don't get me wrong, I could meet a sweet American girl, you know, if the chemistry is there, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, I couldn't, but I mean, just generally speaking, as far as the generalities of the type of women over there, they're very, very warm, sweet, approachable. You know, scientists say that most communication is nonverbal, and I believe that. It just seems like I don't have the gift for gab, Mark, but in the Philippines, I can talk to a lot of women everywhere I go, and I don't think it's just because I'm a foreigner or whatever. That helps, you know, because I do stand out a little bit, but I don't think that's the only reason. The women are just non-judgmental. They don't have this bubble around them, this fear, this paranoia of male strangers like they do in the States. There's a lot of things that are off limits to do in the States. You got to be careful how you approach a girl. I mean, she'll easily think you might be, you know, she might think you're creeping her out or whatever. You know, I don't know, you know. But in the Philippines, back to that, I just girls would flirt with me. Even my last trip, I had a group of girls that were giggling and laughing and, you know, kind of had joking around with me when I was in this cell phone shop. And one of the girls in the back of the pack of girls, she goes, "Hey, you have a girl." One of them said, you have a girlfriend?" I said, "No." And some other girl goes, "Can I apply to be your girlfriend?" You know, they're just cute. That's what she said. "Can I apply to be your girlfriend?" So cute and innocent. It's just innocent. And they play with you and they flirt with you. I mean, nothing. When I'm in the U.S., I mean, come on. I'm a nobody. But every time when you go overseas, and I admit there's that element, the fact that you're a foreigner, but that's fine. I mean, you're like a rock star or something. I mean, I felt like, wow, I was Tom Cruise or something, you know, everywhere I went. It continues to be an amazing experience. The attention of women are really interested in getting to know you. So, wow. And I'll say this, I love the humbleness of those girls. That's the biggest reason. If I had to say one thing that really makes me just fall in love with foreign women in general, because I've been to Peru and I've been to other countries, but especially with Filipinas, foreign women are humble. There's no pride, there's no ego, there's no negativity. I mean, just like, they're so sweet, warm, and approachable, and they don't judge you for trying to talk to them, just going up to them and starting to talk to them. And I'm not saying that happens all the time in America, that a woman's going to react like in a weird way or whatever, but in general, you just can't. I find that I can never approach, I had no success, never can approach an American woman. I'm a creep or a predator if I do, but overseas, it's natural.
It's interesting. It's, I think there's as you're saying that, I'm stumbling on my words here to say, I've explained what I want to say, but as you're explaining that, I'm thinking to myself, last times I would encounter people just here locally, other women, and there's this immediate fear factor that pops up. It's interesting. It's like, who are you? What do you want? Defensiveness that comes into play. And I don't, you know, maybe you'll have stats to explain that to me. I don't fully understand that psychodynamic. But it's true. Everywhere I've gone, and I've been to, I think I counted 24 different countries around the world, and there was, especially in these, what we're calling our developing nations, emerging nations of, you know, the Latin America and the Eastern Europe. And I haven't been to the Asian parts of the world, but it's an openness. You go to strike up a conversation, they stop what they're doing, pay attention. It's like, focus. And it really it was easy. It's almost welcoming, like, oh, you want to talk to me. And a fascination to hear what you have to say makes it very comfortable to go into it. You don't, it's something I believe in, the almost in the spirit realm. You know, I believe we're dual beings, and there's a part of our sense that picks up things from other people. And as we're sitting there, you can almost feel the fear, the tension that comes across with local domestic women immediately, this reaction, like, what do you want? And when you're over there, it's gone. It's devoid. There's relaxedness between both parties in the exchanges, just even on the streets. I'll never forget just asking somebody for – I've done this in many countries. You go and ask somebody for directions, and they're warm. Oh, sure. No, let me help you. In fact, let me take you there. And they go, no, I don't want to stop. No, really, really. It's okay. It's just right here. They'll walk you to wherever it is. And I remember telling a story about in Brazil when I called up the landlord of this apartment I was renting, and I just said, hey, do you know where I can get a good cigar? And she says, well, just a minute. And hangs up the phone. I go, okay, maybe she's going to call me back. A knock at the door, her 23-year-old daughter's there, say, hey, my mom said you'd like to find a cigar shop. I'm here to take you there. She ended up, I don't know what she planned on doing that day, but she canceled the next 4 hours to give me a tour of the entire city and the history and everything else that was there. And just at the end says, you know, I enjoyed myself. Anything else I can do for you? I'm like, no, that was wild. But it's this warmth that there is to you as a person, and especially as a man. I don't know if they would, I can't tell you because I'm not a woman, but I mean, I don't know if they're the same for other women coming in town, but especially for me as a man, it was amazing to have that kind of warmth. And of course, I reflect that. We're good guys. We're not jerks about it. You know, but we're like, wow, you are so amazing. This is, thank you so much. It's a really a give, wonderful exchange of energy, even for people in a non-dating relationship, just in the cultures. But anyway, sorry, I'm taking your thunder here, but I wanted to chime that in because I've experienced that.
It's good for you to share your end of what I'm talking about. It's perfect for the audience. But there's such an authenticity. It's like the genuineness. It's so healthy. I mean, Winston talks about how mentally and emotionally healthy you feel overseas because there isn't this stick-your-chest-out bravado that tends to be kind of subconscious within in our culture, and again, the women are just so warm and friendly and smile and approachable, and it's just a very healthy environment. It's the best way I can put it. It's so awesome to be in, and I think a lot of guys, well, I read a lot of guys who do travel abroad. I'm not talking about going to Cancun or doing the touristy thing that Americans do when they go overseas. I'm talking about getting to know a culture, being among the families, almost living amongst people of other cultures.
Yeah.
You get this warmness, and it's so healthy. It's so awesome. But anyway, so that's that. So I guess what I could talk about next is should I get into some of the reasons why?
I want you to tell me go through this. Tell me about where you came from, the contrast, and then dive into your professor material. I love your quotes. I love your research. Just go wherever you want to go with it, because I love what you bring to the table.
All right, well, first I just want to say that. I think what's so important for guys to understand is that there's opinion, which is a lot of people do. They do the YouTube thing or like what we're doing here, these webinars. And opinions are great. You learn from other people's opinions. But then there's facts and legitimacy. There's expert opinions, statistics, and those you can't deny. Okay, people are professionals because they know what they're doing. Just like a pilot's paid to fly a plane because he knows what he's doing. Same as these social psychologists. And these other experts, they've done their homework. They can look at American culture, step outside from the viewpoint of American culture, being American themselves, and see what's wrong with our culture. I mean, that's why they're professionals. They study this stuff. Things that most Americans may not see, they can see because that's what they do. So anyways, so I came across this material a couple years ago that just so amazed me because it so legitimized the stuff I've always been saying. I mean, a lot of people, some people, like my family's been supportive of my preference for foreigners and Asian women, and they've been pretty cool, no problem. But there's a certain segment of people who think, oh, you're just a little brainwashed, you're negative, why do you guys say this about American women? And I always have to repeat, I'm not saying all American women are this or that way. There are a small percentage that are very similar for women, they're very nice, sweet. So it's not about labeling everybody's one way, paintbrushing everybody, but there are some general differences. So that really excited me. That's what got me kind of wanting to do what I do now and get the word out. Like, it's what's happened to you. That's what sets a lot of people on fire when they discover truth. When you discover truth, and like I felt like I really did discover truth in the sense that I had experts backing up everything I've always thought. So that's how that started. So I'll get into some of that now. First, I'll get into that research here in a second. But first, I'll just say my problems in America, I felt like I had a hard time meeting the kind of women that I'd want here. I'll just start first with the obesity epidemic, okay? I am not attracted.
Obesity?
I hate to say this.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
The obesity, yeah. We have a problem with that here. And I'm just, so far, I haven't been attracted to overweight women. I mean, it's not a judgmental thing. It's just, if I was, I wish I was, Mark, because I'd be in heaven. I mean, in the United States, I mean, it'd be awesome, but I'm not, and who knows, I could meet somebody, and maybe I will be. I'm not, I'm going to put it past myself, but so that's been a problem. And you have 70 statistics showing, like I show in my research section. By the way, my research section right now is at Happier Abroad. If you just click on the research tab, or Dr. Lord confirms our claims, Winston's got different tabs for that. And I'm going to have my own site, globaldatingsolution.com. It'll be up in a couple of weeks, and I'll have all this material up there. But basically, 70% of Americans are overweight, both men and women. And so right out the gate, I realized, wow, my dating pool is only 30% of the total pool of women, and for the most part. I mean, this is confirmed everywhere I went. You know, I'd go any group event I went to, it just literally, you can see 7 out of 10 women are overweight, and the men too, you know. But anyways, it just seemed like to me that every thin woman that I saw that I might have been attracted to was already taken, especially at church. I mean, there are some height, weight proportionate ladies that are nice and just seem quality to me, but I swear every time I go that I find out they got a boyfriend already. It just seems to be the common rule, you know. So anyway, so that's how that there's that issue. And like I talked about before, I think we have and Winston really talks about this. You have 100% of the men chasing after this 30% sliver, because really men are visual. And we're less forgiving of weight than women are. That's one good thing about women. They tend to be more flexible with the weight issue, my personal belief in what I've seen, you know. But you have 100% of the men chasing after the small, same pool of 30% women. And guess what happens to those women? They get spoiled entitlement attitudes. They get real picky. They can demand more and go for it. And maybe they just feel, I think they feel like they get more pickier and they can go with the guys, maybe make more money, whatever it is that naturally attracts women or whatever. And then the other thing, Mark, is that one thing that really, really upset me was going to the bars and clubs where single people tend to go on the weekends. If I can go to church to meet somebody, which I do try to do still, bars and singles places, clubs is where I go. And there's so many, I think this 30% I'm talking about, they're when they're out there, they're so prideful and so stuck up. I mean, I can't tell you how many women, when I try to say hello to them, just ignored me. Or laughed at me, like turned around, laughed with her friend. Oh, look at this guy! He's trying to hit on me. You know, there's that negativity that a lot of American women have, like just a nasty, mm-hmm. you know, screw you. I don't need to talk to you. I'm too good for you. And it happens a lot. I'm not saying all of them.
Yeah.
But it's a pride. It's a narcissistic pride. So that's kind of another thing that I've noticed. The girls that I wanted, so many of that 30%, maybe half of them, are have this spoiled and attitude of pride and narcissism. Well, they're not friendly. So
yeah, no, you know, I appreciate you saying that, because it's funny, I've said the same thing here, because we often talk about, usually it's, you know, the conversation you're having is about like the dating scene in the West and the Western developed nations. And right. I usually take the same argument and apply it overseas, because what we're talking about is an issue of supply and demand. And the interesting part is here, you were correct, men are visual by nature, and you know, they were saying, if you know, the primary drives, and they go back, you know, tracing this, or heard anthropologists describe the primal nature of, you know, the creation having to do with one is the visual attractor, and you know, the other one is looking for the security issues, and then it goes back through the animal kingdom and everything else. And so it seems to, whether people want to call that a you know, prejudicial statement or something, it still appears to apply in the dating arena, where men are going to be visually more attracted to the healthy bodied females that are physically healthy and keep themselves visually attractive. I mean, you know, the peacocks in the wild, one of them, you know, has the beauty to attract the other, and that's part of the nature, the balance there is. But you're correct, in our culture, when you have, you know, I've heard the number 66%, if it's 70% that are overweight or obese now, I have no problem believing that. So you're correct, is that it's not as much an issue for guys here in the West, because a guy can be like an ex-football player and be big and buff and still be a nice guy and convey himself well and attract any kind of a woman he wants to, depending on how comfortable he is himself and how he plays the game in the dating scene. But the women who are in that group, that 30% that are attractive, they're getting attention from the 100% of the male population. And I've heard statistically that in that group of the physically generally healthy female population that care for their attire, that they're hit on in one form or another 15 times a day. 15 times, whether it's looks, glances, direct contact, communication, electronically, other ways. And when they go on dates, the guys dote on them because they feel like they got the lucky prize to go out with one of the pretty ones. And so I always turn around and say, you know what, we want to judge that, but I'll be darned, if that were me and 15 times a day I'm getting pursued and people throwing gifts at me and you know, praising me and feeling like they're worthy to be in my presence, after a while your psycho believes that.
Right.
That this is your world. It's like the athlete who reads his own press clippings after a while. Wow, I must be this good. So
yes.
I can't blame them for that. I would be the same way.
100%
but to say that it's
correct.
Not true and to ignore it and to say, oh, you're just being... No, we would all be that way if we were treated like that. And we're just talking about normal issues of the biology of the species, the laws of attraction, physical, visual attraction, and the laws of culture, with a conditioned behavior, the Pavlov effect, you know? And so it is absolutely true, and but it's one of those taboo subjects that we're not allowed to talk about. Because you can't, in fact, I even have guys call me and they apologize for the fact, you know, Mark, I know it sounds shallow, but I have to say, I really do want somebody pretty. And so I'm like, what are you having to apologize to me for that?
Yeah. And you look at the way women don't like short men. I don't accuse women of being shallow because for that, every woman I've ever talked to, I mean, literally almost 100%, and the science studies confirm this, women aren't attracted and generally don't date men shorter than themselves. So why is it shallow that we're not attracted to overweight women? But that's how it's viewed, is how being shallow. But and then the other issue that affects us, what we're talking about, and gets to you, is the gender imbalance. There are 20% more men than went between 21 and 42 years old, according to the studies. There's 15 to 20% more men than women in most cities. And that also creates an imbalance where women have more of the choice, even besides all these other issues. Jean Twenge says in her book, she says, I'm going to quote Jean Twenge. By the way, y'all can read my research section where I give all the credentials, but Jean Twenge is a professor at San Diego State University, a social psychologist, and she's been on CNN, Fox News, Newsweek magazine. She counsels police departments, I think even the military and some parts of the government. She's awesome. She's a heavy hitter. But she says, between the ages of 25 and 39, for every one unmarried woman, there are 1.2 unmarried men. Even when you look only between the ages of 35 and 39, there are still thousands more unmarried men. I can hear women immediately yelling that all of the good ones are taken, but the truth is that it's single men who should be anxious and complaining. Jean Twenge, Generation Me, that is her book. So that kind of covers that, I think. So the next thing I want to get to is basically what I've learned. The experts talk about women's unrealistic expectations in America. Mm-hmm. Jean Twenge, in her book Generation Me, page 133, says, most of the women we interviewed insisted that they were not looking for a Prince Charming. Then, without missing a beat, they described an equally unattainable ideal. It's ironic that we've developed such lofty expectations of our potential husbands at the time nearly 50% of marriages still end in divorce. So she's talking about, and Dr. Laura Schlesinger really rips into this, and we don't have time to go all into it, but I got pages of quotes that talk about both of these experts, actually all three of my experts, Dr. Laura and Jean Twenge and Laura Gottlieb, say women have unrealistic dating expectations. They're looking for Mr. Perfect, and as you talk about in your book, they're like, what are you bringing to the table? Or they want tall, dark, and handsome. They expect things that aren't realistic. And that makes it hard to please them. Rich, yeah. Oh, God, yes. Jean Twenge goes into that, too. And I'll get to that in a second. Jean Twenge talks about in her book that the rise in narcissism in America, we've had a 67% rise in narcissism. That's why she calls her book The Narcissism Epidemic and Generation Me. She said most of it occurred with American women. That's not a lie. I quote it word for word. If we get to it later, I'll quote it. And that tells you a lot. I mean, you have Dr. Laura and Jean Twenge talking about women's unrealistic dating expectations and then looking for Mr. Perfect, and then you've got Jean Twenge confirming it with her research and studies that most of the rise in narcissism occurred with the women. So, you look at divorces, the divorce rate, most people don't know this, most people know that there's a 50 to 60% divorce rate in America. I think that's well known. Sure. But most people don't know that there's only a 20% divorce rate when you marry a foreign woman. That's according to the USCIS, United States Immigration Services, report to Congress. They say, I'm going to quote what the USCIS, this is a branch of the U.S. government, said in the report that was done for them. It says, it is interesting to note that based largely on data provided by the agencies themselves, along with the Commission on Filipinos Overseas Report, that's a branch of the Filipino government, marriages arranged through these services would appear to have a lower divorce rate than the nation as a whole, fully 80% of these marriages having lasted over the years for which reports are available. There's the science. Yeah. There's the proof. And so that's why I tell guys, not only are you avoiding the narcissism and the hard-to-please attitudes and the golden princess attitudes that's so prevalent in our country, you're going to have a much better chance of staying married. I mean, it's so much more healthy, and you have better odds of having a happy marriage. I mean, half of U.S. marriages are unhappy. I hear that over and over and over from research reports and people I know. Half of our marriages, of the 40%, the 50% that are surviving, half of them are very unhappy. But I'm telling you, the fact you only have a 20% divorce rate with these foreign ladies, it speaks volumes for, I think, how happy the marriages are.
Yeah. I remember that study because I'd found that research before, and it was interesting when I was on the Dr. Phil show. Dr. Phil even mentioned that he'd heard about this statistic, but they edited that out of the final broadcast later. Yeah. But in that same report, there's just this little line that also said, and by studies, they also appear to be happier than the average domestic couple. And it was like eight little words thrown in the middle of that study, and they don't reference what research it was, but it was interesting that they're actually studying the personal satisfaction and contentment and happiness factor even within the relationships, and really giving it, you know, a lean towards this. Yeah. And I just want to pause for a moment to say that the significance of that factor, I want to help guys, because the number one fear I get from guys is this abandonment issue. And it's like, I'm going to get her here and then find out she only wanted a green card. She's going to leave me for some other bigger, better deal. All these kind of things that go into it. And that's why I encourage guys, if they haven't yet, go back and on the website, there's the interview with Anna where she basically took over one of these Thursday night shows and just did the whole thing. I was out of town, and I just let her go with it. And she never answers this question directly, but by the end of it, you have this overwhelming sense about their view on so many things in life, and you totally get it. You understand why they're loyal to their men, why they're not looking for the bigger, better deal, what the most important things in their life are. But you have to hear it from one of them and get a sense of just not what they're saying, but the underlying tone, the commitment, the core values that are in their heart, for you to understand that these women are looking for something different than what you're used to in the West, where they're first asking you what you make and what car you drive.
Exactly.
If they were just looking for that, then they would be onto the bigger, better deal like everything else. But the point is, even women, after they've lived here 5-10 years, the majority of these cases, as you're saying, statistically, are staying within their marriages and their relationship and reportedly happier because their core values from these other countries don't revolve around materialism, because, first, frankly, they don't have as much of it in their country growing up. That's not what they're looking for. And so I really want to encourage you to listen to that statistic. Your chances of marrying somebody who will leave you for the bigger, better deal are twice by marrying somebody from your own country, statistically.
Yes. They talk about the foreign women coming after you for money, a green card. No, no, no. I'm telling you, America, I'm sorry to say this, but in general, again, not all, but in general, I have that fear with American women far more. Man, are you kidding me? I mean, they want this and that.
What do you mean?
I totally fear that more with that's what's so ironic. Like, I really have a huge fear of that with American women. If you don't make enough, or if you fall in financial hard times, man, a foreign woman will stay with you till your last penny. That's basically my observation. They will stand with you. They don't believe in divorce. They don't have. So guys need to look. I was just going to say. It's a fear-mongering thing. I mean, look at people are afraid to fly. They think flying's dangerous. Well, airplanes crash. It gets in the news, and everybody gets all fearful about flying. Same thing in this concept. Look at the stats and the facts. Don't go by the fear-mongering cultural stereotypes. Anyways, go ahead, Mark.
And an amen coming from Dennis Jan, who's been in the aviation industry all his life, and who happened to jump on here at 4 in the morning his time. Welcome, buddy. He's over there in Ukraine right now in Nikolaev. But, I support what you're saying, because we're really looking for is people have a different value system, and that's one of the reasons we're telling you that the international arena is the superior option. And guys, if you haven't already, just put it in your mind, pick a date and plan on going over there, because you know it's something you need to experience. If you're curious about this at all, you need to make it happen for yourself, to answer the question once and for all: could this be the solution for me? Is this something that really could be viable? If you're already here on this call, you're already listening to this webinar, you already are asking yourself that question, you need to answer it at some point in your life. Just plan on it sometime in the next year or two. I don't care. It doesn't matter when. You can go with me or somebody else. I don't care. But you really owe it to yourself to answer this question, get overseas, sit across the table from some of these ladies, and really realize not only what could be there for you, but how valuable you are. Anyway, back to the program, Professor.
Let's get back to some professor statistics here, Mark. Let's go. All right. Next thing I was going to talk about is what a lot of guys don't realize is that is a statistical fact, and every research study confirms this. The American ladies initiate divorce almost 70% of the time. Of all divorces that happen, I think the exact number is 67% is what they quote. But that's almost 70% of the time they're the initiators of divorce. It's not because the men were sometimes, sure, men were jerks, they cheated, there's exceptions, but in general the other study I saw said it's more the reason why is because these women feel like they're out. One of the reasons because there's a study done, I think I have it later in my research here, that done by some university professors. It talked about how they want their deserving freedom, or they've outgrown their husband. I mean, this is stupid. Wow. Shit. I mean, this is not real life stuff. This is just stuff I want to get their freedom, or whatever the reasons they quote. But I may get to that later when we talk on. But now you compare this to foreign women whose values, core values, are different. One quote I found on the internet in one of the research I was doing. It says, because divorce is illegal in many Asian countries, women are not pre-programmed to think of divorce as a way out. To her, family is everything, and they will not give it up without giving their all. So that's something I found that kind of matches up what I believe. But they just don't believe in divorce. Actually, it's the American culture. Like I said, you know, in American culture, where we're a divorce accepting culture, and we have the highest divorce rate in the entire world, as do most of the countries that top the divorce rate of the world are countries where feminism is strongest. I found that to be, wow. I mean, is that coincidence? Who knows? I haven't seen the studies on it, but I find that an interesting correlation at the very least. All right, so I guess the next day, if you don't have any comments on that, Mark,
you're on a roll. Let's roll through your material.
Now, I want to get to the narcissism. Jean Twenge, her biggest thing is the narcissism epidemic. I'm just going to read some things so our readers can get a taste for kind of what's out there and what they can find more of, you know, in my research section. But I'm going to read some sentences here from Jean Twenge. In data from 37,000 college students, narcissistic personality traits rose just as fast as obesity from the 1980s to the present, with this shift especially pronounced for women. The problem with entitlement in relationships is this kind of mentality. You're special. How dare anyone not show you respect? Now, Mark, I think you and I have seen that. What are we describing here? American fill-in-the-blank women? Not all of them, again, but we sense that in our dating environment. You know, I really believe that there's a lot of that.
Well, it's because, like you said, the disparity, the ratios, it's the Pavlov effect. They have a sense of entitlement because – you know, most of them, if they, you know, use what they've got, can get what they want, and so they learn to expect it. So,
So, and then narcissists are also aggressive when someone tries to restrict their freedom. Who are you to tell me what I can or can't do? How dare you challenge my special stature in life? And that, I think, that quote from Jean Twenge describes how I think narcissists are hard to get along with in relationships. Mm. That might be why we have one of the reasons why the highest divorce rate in the entire world, I believe. And then I'm sorry, were you about to say?
No, I'm just, I'm okay, good. Along.
Sorry, I thought you were going to jump in. Okay, and then she says, it is interesting to note Asians as a group still score relatively low on measures of narcissism. Within the United States, Asian Americans score lower on narcissism than any other ethnic group. And I think you can substitute in place of Asian probably just any foreign woman, from whether it's Latin America or Europe or Russia, you know. Then she says, our individualistic culture narcissistically teaches people not to compromise. In other words, you shouldn't put up with any flaws in your partner. You're too good for that. There's that entitlement attitude that we have so much of here in this country. So there is a what have you done for me lately attitude in relationships, she says. And if the answer is not enough, then it's on to the next partner. After all, goes our narcissistic cultural pattern. You deserve better. It's difficult to focus on someone else when you've been taught your whole life to focus on yourself. And that's pretty much the narcissism quotes that I've chosen from Jean Twenge. But again, she says she's got three or four different quotes where she points towards women being the major shift in narcissism where most of it occurred. And how can you stay married or have healthy relationships with women if they're that way, compared to foreign women who are very, very humble? You know, being humble is a very healthy thing, and I'll get to that here in a second. And then another thing she talks about is that American women, for the first time, now score equal to men on masculinity testing. Jean Twenge says, the change was so large that by the early 1990s, men and women's scores on the scale of so-called masculine traits were indistinguishable. So if you really want a feminine sweet woman, it's unlikely to be in the U.S. I mean, as far as the femininity part goes. Not that you can't find good women. Again, I don't mean to paintbrush all, but generally speaking, the feminism, the soft, sweet feminism, the sweetness is gone. It's replaced by narcissism and defensive attitudes and who are you talking to me or I'm too good for you. Or it's kind of subconscious, subliminal type stuff that goes on that makes it hard for us here. And then women are angry. Dr. Laura Schlesinger, quote from Dr. Laura Schlesinger, how is it that so many women are angry with men in general, yet expect to have a happy life married to one of them? And women don't realize how angry they are. That's what Dr. Laura says about, you know, she's talking about the women in the States. And then Dr. Laura goes on to describe characteristics, a lot of things she mentions for characteristics of the women in America. This is in her The Proper Care and Feeding of Husbands book. And I call it being the dysfunctional. I'm going to get to this section. This section I call is the dysfunctionality that's so common, I believe, with American women. Not all of them, again, but just quite a few of them. And Dr. Laura, I'm going to describe these things that she talks about. But she says, Dr. Laura says, these attitudes and characteristics represent the preponderance of women in America. Dr. Laura uses the word preponderance in her book to describe these characteristics of women in America. So she says, I'm going to do some quotes from Dr. Laura. The feminist double whammy of the elevation of women without men and children without fathers and the dismissal of men as unnecessary or even dangerous. See, Dr. Laura used the word dangerous. The feminism teaches women to look at men as predatory, dangerous. She says, has certainly not contributed to the kind of positive disposition that women need in order to function well within a monogamous heterosexual committed relationship. See, Dr. Laura just said, doesn't contribute to a positive disposition to function well. I call it, they're dysfunctional. I mean, so many women in our country, unfortunately, I believe our relationship and marriage dysfunctional. And Dr. Laura just kind of said that. This sense of entitlement comes from a culture that has elevated feelings over obligation, responsibility, and commitment. I have a right to be happy, don't I, is not an infrequent comment from callers frustrated that their marriages haven't put them in a perpetual volume strip state. And this focus on happiness helps them to rationalize their virtual abandonment of marriage and family, replacing it with hobbies, drugs, and alcohol, work, affairs, whining in therapy or with friends and family, or hostility directed at those who love them. This is not a minor issue. This is the point I bring to the attention of many women callers who, with unrealistic demands and outrageously negative behaviors, determine that the solution to the problems in their home is divorce. Dr. Laura is saying this. I mean, there's so many. I mean, we're divorce-accepting culture, and that makes sense. Why, you know, like I said, American women initiate divorce almost 70% of the time. They are the initiators of it, and Dr. Laura is affirming the reasons why. When I tell women callers that they are obligated to their husbands for such and such, I generally get two reactions. The first is surprise. The second is anger over perceived oppression. Women are surrounded by a culture that glorifies selfish gratification over sacrifice. It's no wonder so many women are surprised to not only hear of their obligations to husbands and children, but are also amazed at the gratification drive from doing so. I mean, Dr. Laura really hammers this stuff home. As long as women disrespect, she goes on to say, as long as women disrespect what they have to offer as wives and mothers, they will continue to disrespect their men who serve as husbands and fathers. No one benefits, no one is happy. Again, points to the reason why we have a high divorce rate. And lastly, the last quote in this section, Dr. Laura talks about self-centeredness with women in America. She says, I believe it's a result of the women's movement with its condemnation of just about everything male is evil, stupid, and oppressive, and the denigration of female and male roles and families. The result is women get married thinking largely about what the marriage and their man can do for them. And when there's so little emphasis on the giving, the nitpicking and pettiness chews up and spits out what could have been a good marriage. This is all stuff from Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Women are her fan base. This is not, you know, it's amazing. And she's telling them.
Yep. No, as I was going to say, I've gone through a lot of this stuff before in other materials. And let me touch on the hot one, because I could comment on everything you said and agree with you and give you stories. But I need to really hone in on one you edited yourself. And I need to unedit it and just throw it on the table, because it's sort of the elephant in the room that guys don't talk about and we need to talk about, is that women use sex as a manipulation tool and something to get their way and a threat in the Western cultures to withhold from their men if they don't get what they want. And, you know, I remember that Dr. Laura quote. She was basically saying, you know, ladies, if your man wants sex, give it to him. And this is where they had the big uproar. And it's interesting. I could go from any perspective and talk about this. I'll talk about from two perspectives very quickly. One, and they don't want to hear this, but in the scriptures, St. Paul in his letter says, he's talked to both men and women, do not withhold yourself from each other sexually, lest you lead the other one into temptation. And so literally from the scriptural perspective, it says, look, you know, you have a spouse for a purpose. And I want to share with you the because obviously we discussed the upheaval there is here, because in our schools, there are university classes. Nearly every major you take is going to require you to go through a gender sensitivity class. And in doing so, they're going to tell you that, like you said, is most of it's how about men are the sources, the causes of all wars. Men are rapists. You don't hear women rapists. That men are, you know, the leading numbers of murderers and violent attackers. And you go down this thing where it's really the source of all evil in the world are males. And that is what they're taught. And men have to sit through these classes as well. So immediately, you have this social guilt on you just for being a male in the Western nations, because that is what's taught. And then the women come in, and they feel resentful because they feel like they've had unfair wage opportunities, which is interesting. In the major, if you go and do wage comparisons in the major cities, the top 20 major cities in the country, I think somebody said half of them, they actually show women are making more career-wise. But as a country, it's still a few percentage below. But it's not like overseas where it's half what the men make, you know. But still, they're going to complain. They resent the men. But let me give you the foreign woman's perspective on this. And I'll just give you two stories. The very first Russian woman that I interacted with was Kira Moore. She married her husband, Mike. And by this time, they'd been married 9 years. They had one child. And I had first heard about going overseas and dating in Eastern Europe from him. I'd been dating in Latin America. And I wanted to meet them. I wanted to look them in the eye, see what this is really about. And this is why Peter Mara has opened his house. You know, we've said, come meet us. We've had almost every other week we have lunch with some guy who flies to town or comes here and says, I just want to meet you guys as a couple. You know, so we make ourselves available. We really want the information out there. We don't hide from any of this. And we're trying to show what's real. But she says, you know, she comes over here, 9 years married. She took her medical degree. She's now a full doctor in California, running a floor of a hospital for Kaiser. And she's coming home from work, and her husband and I are sitting there having a beer, smoking a cigar, waiting for dinner to be made. And I'm watching this humbleness and just the love and the comfortableness as there is a family. And, of course, he's watching the baby. He's not being a slouch. We get this family scene going on. And I was sharing with her some of my dating stories, and I was waiting to get her reaction, because my normal thing is if you tell this to a normal woman, they're going to be defensive and say, well, you just obviously are, you know, doing something wrong, you know. And she says, you know, it amazes me now. I've been working at this hospital for all this time, and every day I see these women who angrily feel like they have to compete against their own husbands. And it just breaks my heart. It says, why do you need to do that? Why do you create a home like an atmosphere like that within your own home? And when she said that, it resonated with me, because that's the way I felt. It's like here the women are trying to compete with men on every level. I really felt one of the things, I'm just going to say this, and you guys can think whatever you want of me, my personal impression that was in my heart that I couldn't put into words until later, I really felt that women were basically wishing they were men, and that they did not value their own femininity and what that could bring to the table. And that's the one thing I went overseas. The number one impression I came back with, my first impression that overwhelmed me, was they just love being women. They're not trying to be anything else. They radiate in the glory of their femininity and who they are as a woman. They're not weak women. These are women who most of their lives are going to have to be self-reliant, but they don't want to be men. They glory in who they are, and they love to adorn themselves. They love the fashion. And you hear the saying about foreign women, they don't dress for the men, they dress for each other. They're always looking what each other are doing, and it's almost a fashion show among themselves. They love the fashions. They love being beautiful. And and that is just a core difference in the culture. Later, I was in a conversation where my wife and I, when we used to go speak with Foreign Affairs, and they were at, after one of the opens they had us speak as a couple, and we're having breakfast with John and Tanya, and my wife and I got in this conversation about these women who just felt like they were going to withhold sex from their men. And Tanya says, I'm in a group of these women in Scottsdale, these snooty women, and I'm listening to them as they're going like, oh, that man, he just wants it like every other day or something. And it's just like, oh, and she's telling my wife, she's going like, is it really that hard to give sex to your husband? I mean, really, is it really that big a deal? You know, why, listening to this negotiation that goes on in the Western cultures for whatever reason is something I just think is intolerable in a marriage. And a man, if he's in a marriage relationship and she's pulling that, he needs to talk to her, because I just believe that is one of those things that should never be negotiated. It should never be used as a manipulation tool or anything. It's a sacred thing. It's an intimate thing between you two, and it should never become part of an argument or a device for control in any way, shape, or circumstance. And I'll tell you how strongly I feel about this topic. I actually talked to my wife about this before we got married, and She couldn't even comprehend the conversation. It made no sense to her. She goes, look, you're marrying me to be your wife. My job is to give you sex whenever you need it. You can ask me 24 hours a day. You know, that's my job. That's why I'm your wife. Why would you, you know, for her to even think that you would be horny without going to her and just saying I'm a horny woman, it was like, why am I here then? And I just want to share that with you guys on a realistic level. There is a huge difference in the mentality about what you share together as people. And these things that should be comfortable part of relationships are not games and manipulation with the foreign women. Okay, I'm off my soapbox, but I wanted to nail that one.
And Dr. Lord talks about how American women use sex as a weapon. She says part of her quote says, cut him off from sex because they're annoyed about something. She also says the use of sex to punish or control, you didn't do what I wanted. And here's a full quote. Those are partial quotes. Full quote, it is astonishing to which female society denigrates a man's sex drive, reducing him to merely a rutting animal with no deeper context. Male sexuality is another subject that seems to elicit hostility in many women. A stay-at-home mother, Jessica, belongs to a number of groups, and a talk about sex is always anti-male. The majority of the women are just tired and see their husbands as selfish for wanting some. Dr. Laura that's a little bit I'll do on that. But Dr. Laura actually discusses that in her book. So that covers that. I mean, it's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up about the sex as a weapon type thing. I've experienced that. I mean, that's big here. It's more foreign women don't have that. Foreign women don't have that dysfunctionality, let me put it that way. All right, now on to humbleness and humility. I'm going to read a quote from Dr. Jean Twenge's book. Dr. Jean Twenge basically just says, you know, American culture is becoming narcissistic with women leading the way in that. And foreign women are just the opposite. And even Dr. Jean Twenge talks about this several times in her book, how, like I just read that quote about Asian people, at least narcissistic. And you got to understand, you guys can't underrate how narcissism can, you may meet a woman, she seems nice and all this, but underneath, I think there's still some of that cultural narcissism that's hard to avoid that may pop up later. You just never know what you're going to get, you know, here. Mm-hmm. But anyways, Jean Twenge says, in many ways, humility is the opposite of narcissism. Some people misconstrue humility as bad, equating it with shame or self-hatred. Humility is not the same as humiliation. True humility is a strength, the ability to see or evaluate yourself accurately and without defensiveness. Notice we said accurately, not negatively. Overall, humble people are more connected to others. And that's what we sense when we go overseas. Winston talks about the connection you feel when you go abroad. You feel so much more connected to people, especially the women, that there is a warmer connection. And it's because they're genuine, they're authentic, they're humble, and that's healthy. And that's why I think these marriages to foreign women, I personally believe that's why they're so highly successful when you look at the stats and what the studies show. The foreign women humble people are not defensive. They don't take things personally. They're easier to get along with. Some people say, oh, Asian girls are submissive. Well, I like to say they're accommodating. They're easier to get along with in general. You don't have to worry about so much drama there's so much drama with a lot of women in America. I'm sorry to say, but there is. Foreign women are so mature, just so. I mean, they're kind of like women in America in their 40s. I mean, they're women like Jean Twenge talks about how the narcissism is mainly with those born after 1967, and I'll agree with that because I've been around American women that are in their 40s, you know, and they're pretty cool. They're much less full of drama. They're just more so functional in relationships. So I think, you know, I like what Jean Twenge talk about because it matches up my experience. It's mainly the 20s and 30s and or even younger. So anyways, so that's that. I don't know if you have a comment on that, Mark, but that's the subject of humbleness over the form.
No. What do you got left?
Okay, one more. We're just at the last section, and we're just about done. The very last section here is the dating profile comparison. And this, Mark, is my favorite.
I love it. Go for it. This is great. I read your stuff on this. Go for it.
All right. You know, Mark, I've had a lot of guys tell me this, all my stuff at Happier Abroad. Man, Steve, your dating profile comparison hit home. I saw that you're right. The samples I gave for the American Woman profiles were so typical and representative. And then they saw what I showed with the – I mainly use Filipino profiles, though Latinas and Euro girls and Russian girls have similar profiles.
Well, go for
but
it.
The Filipinos are very different. I mean, they're very humble and different. So anyway, so first thing, the American Woman profiles, long list of demands. And Dr. Jean Twenge and Dr. Lori even talk about how, you know, like Jean Twenge mentioned, they're unrealistic demands and expectations. And you see it on the dating profiles. And there's a strong, perverse focus on a man's income and you know, what job title you have, what can you provide for her. It's like, what do you bring to the table attitude that you talk about in your book, Mark. So, and then they focus on income with hidden, let me stress, hidden keywords, such as you must be financially stable or established in his career. Some women will say, please let me know up front if you can't pay your bills. Have a job and a car. I mean, American women, I'm sorry, but they are so freaking obsessed. I mean, that's all they talk about. It's disgusting and nasty. I'm sorry, but it is. There's nothing genuine and nice and sweet about girls. And this is not a few. This is not 10% of American Woman profiles. I mean, you look at Plenty of Fish or any dating site, you see about 40% of the time or even 50%, half of them, you see some of the stuff. That's all they talk about. They don't talk about raising a family, finding a good husband, having a warm home, they don't talk about those type of things. Or needing a man in their life. They talk about this crap, you know? Who wants to hear that? And then some of them say, one of them says, I'm looking for a non-creepy, non-stalker man. I can't tell you how many times I see the word creep or creepy in American women's dating profiles. One says, kicking ass and taking names. Great. There's the masculinity that shows up. And then lastly, a lot of these women, you'll notice on their profiles, Mark, they'll say, I don't need a man. I'm independent. I need a man to compliment me. Now, that doesn't make them guilty of some crime, but you want a man to compliment you, fine. But what I like about foreign women, Mark, is that they're not just looking for a compliment. They need me. They need a man. I mean, they want a man. It's very important to them, and that makes for a stronger, longer, deeper connection. That's why American women are too independent emotionally.
Well, you bring up a good point. It's really interesting. I mean, I love what you said about the profiles, and you know, the funny part would be to put visual side by sides, because I swear, I remember my dating days and being on the websites, and I remember just women who were just like so slouched out, like in pajamas, they didn't care, no makeup, their hair everywhere, and they're like, really? Really? And the funny part is, they're still, I'm looking at it, they're still getting written to all the freaking time. And it's like, it almost doesn't matter here, and maybe that's why they don't have to improve, because they don't need to. They can still find, you know, they can still get a male attention if they want. But, you know, if you were to put even the photos side by side. Now, you say it's unfair on the other side because overseas, it's the dating agencies that sponsor the photo shoots, so the girl doesn't have to pay for it. And I suppose if women here in America got free photo sessions, you know, they would dress up for it as well. But still, it's the attitude and the verbiage, you know, that goes along with that. And the classic story out of my book was that woman I was chatting with, and I was enjoying the conversation, and said, you know, we ought to go out sometime. And immediately the tone of the conversation changed. She goes, well, I get asked out by a lot of guys, and I would have to first know what kind of date you would take me on. And I was like, wow, you know.
Yeah, that's common.
I was just so done with this whole conversation at that point, because, like, you just want to go somebody who's going to, you know, it's the same thing they're looking for. When you go overseas and you give a woman romantic attention, and all that means is that you're actually curious about them. you're actually paying attention to what they're saying, and you're curious about them. That is their definition of romantic attention. I mean, I'm not talking about flowers and jewelry. I mean just actually quieting down long enough to actually be interested in them. They don't get that from the guys over there. And, you know, the contrast is pretty fantastic. Well, we're wrapping. Oh, go ahead. Is there something you'd like to close on before we wrap up this?
Yeah, so if one more in, we'll close out. This is so critical. We'll be done. This is the last part. The foreign lady, guys need to understand that on the foreign lady profiles, I'll just wrap this up real quick. They usually talk about they dream of husband and family. Like 70% of the profiles I've seen, the foreign ladies focus on talking about having a husband and family. You never, ever see that in American women's dating profile. Go to Plenty of Fish anywhere. They don't talk about, I'm looking for a nice husband, man, or family, dream of having family. I mean, almost never. And the foreign ladies have a healthy sense of what really matters in life. They're more genuine, authentic, and there's not a critical, jaded, judgmental attitude like you see that on a lot of the profiles, American profiles. And lastly, they're very appreciative and grateful. They're spiritual. They say, God bless. Look, you know, God will lead me to my man. They're very spiritual, which I think is healthy. And I'm just going to wrap up reading this. Promise this is the last bit. I'm going to wrap up reading these few lines from foreign lady dating profiles. Most of these come from the Filipinas, but I've seen similar quotes on other, foreign woman's profiles. Okay, I'm going to read through this real quick and we'll be done. She says, a lot of times they'll say, thank you for viewing my profile. I'm sorry if I'm not what you're looking for. They'll say, I may not be pretty, but I have whatever quality, you know. I'm not so smart, but, okay. Notice the humbleness and the lack of pride by them saying that. I've never had an American woman say, thank you for viewing my profile, or I'm sorry I'm not what you're looking for. It's so sweet the way the foreign ladies are. She said, then they'll say, I hope you write me back. I've never heard an American woman in 10 years of dating, internet dating, ever say that to me, but it's all the time with foreign profiles. And then a few more. If I submit myself to any man, I will be with him till my last breath. Another one, I would indeed be truly honored if you accept me as your new friend and allow the wonderful pleasure of getting to know you. I hope God will provide you a woman that perfectly loves you for the rest of your life till death can make you proud of. Another one, I'm just a simple girl who dreamed to have a happy family. I need someone who also needs me. I'm a simple woman with a happy disposition in life. Even the simplest things from others can make me happy. If I find the man of my dreams, he will be the king of my heart. To love another person is to see the face of God. We don't have much, but the character we learn from our parents are more than gold. I hope, and lastly, Mark, it says, I hope I can find the man who will give a beautiful light to my life. These are all just quotes I took. Okay, from foreign women dating profiles.
You know, I want to, just as we wrap this up, I want to touch on one thing that you said. You know, the issue of needing a man or a woman, you know, it goes back to the statement in Genesis when God said it's not good for man to be alone. And ever since then, men have had no problem saying, you know what, I've looked at the option of being a bachelor and being married, and I'm okay with admitting and saying, you know what, I do need a woman in my life, and I'm okay with saying that. But the interesting part is it doesn't seem to be as comfortable for women to say, I need a man in the Western cultures. They resent that and resist that with all their power, and it's a psychological drive for them to say, I don't need a man. I forget the comedian who said, you know, with a fresh set of batteries, there's nothing a man can bring to the table I can't get for myself, you know, and it was funny, but it's like there's some resonant truth in that. And the truth is still the same. I don't care if they're Western or not. Women need a man. Men need a woman. Yeah. It's the way it's designed. And to not come right out and be comfortable saying that, there's some psychological and emotional baggage between the sexes that needs to be healed still in the West. And the women overseas are very comfortable with saying, I do need a man. I want a man in my life, and I want our life together to be radiant. And I look to him to be my knight in shining armor, and I will do what I can to make our family work, and I will fight through any challenges to make sure it works. And the commitment and dedication is heartwarming, it's endearing, and it's proven itself now with the couples that we know. So, Steve,
That's the magic of it.
I want to thank you for being on our show at EuropeanDreamConnections.com and our Thursday night webinars. And what you brought is absolutely insightful. I'm sure the guys absolutely loved it. And we'll be glad to, when you get your blog form up there, we'll be glad to let guys know about that. So thank you again, my friend. Appreciate you being on the show.
Okay, you bet. See y'all later. Thanks.
You got it. Chris Brown. This for the women.